I love courting.
I love love.
It's great.
Courting, yeah.
Do the kids still call it that these days?
I hope so, man. I'm trying to think of something funny and clever to say, but I can't. I'm just charmed by the courting.
We're just enjoying.
To White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood boys.
Bollywood boys fleeing their home country in the hope of a better life, only to be disappointed.
I don't know why I thought this was like a dramedy.
I would describe it as a dramedy.
I guess, yes. It has comedic moments. I guess I'm used to my drama being a little more superficial and a little less real.
Your dramedies being a little more superficial?
Like, yeah, like usually it's like, I don't know, the drama of one person getting sick or something, which, you know, spoiler
does
alert.
Does happen.
But like the fact that it's like, oh no, this like is actively happening around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just slightly more of a downer than I was expecting.
Yeah, and I...
Have we mentioned we're talking about Donkey?
Yes. Thank you, Katie. Yeah, I really wish that Donkey had been either a comedy or a drama. And
I agree.
You can have comedies that are about serious things, about social justice issues, about, like, big things that are happening in the world that you want to call attention to, and you might have some serious moments alongside that, but the movie is still, like, a comedy.
Yeah.
And I wish it had either been that or a drama, like, not a comedy, not a movie that was trying to be a comedy, but then also had someone self-immolate in the middle of it. Like,
yeah, there's just, like, some triggers that happen in this movie
too.
Like, yeah, like suicide, self-immolation, attempted rape.
Yep.
Those might be the big ones.
I think those are the
but
ones.
But I think that's enough.
I think that's plenty. Yeah. And I did enjoy watching the movie. I'm not going to go so far as to say that I liked it, if that makes sense. Like, I think I maybe had a little bit more of a better sense of the fact that there was some drama to it. Because I don't know, had you ever seen a trailer for it?
No.
Yeah, and in the trailer, I think that you see a little bit more of the drama happening. But one thing that I did appreciate about it is that unlike some of the other like social justice-rooted films we've watched, there wasn't any part of it that undermined its message. Like,
I agree. The message, it knew what it was doing.
Exactly. It was clear throughout. And they didn't veer off from that in any serious way. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, I think a well-made film, and I liked the acting a lot. And it's just always a pleasure to see Shah Rukh Khan, you know?
Yeah, and it was really fun to see him doing, like, something funny and charming and adorable again, you know? Like, after Pathaan and Jawan, which are both so, like, just...
some hardcore action.
Raspy action Shah Rukh. This was, like, raspy happy Shah Rukh.
Right. Who also can still kill a man.
Yeah. And has bulging muscles.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Donkey was directed by Rajkumar Hirani. And it stars Shah Rukh Khan as Hardy, Topsy Pannu as Manu, Vikram Kochhar as Bugu, and then Anil Grover as Bali. And then we have also Boman Irani as Geetu, and then Vicky Kaushal as Suki.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Vicky Kaushal's performance, and I had read several reviews that were saying that he was like the highlight of the movie.
Yeah.
And he did also win Best Supporting Actor at the Filmfare Awards for this role.
I think he deserves that. Yeah. I think also there were just a few times where I was like, okay, I'm prepared to laugh. And then I was like, oh, there's sad music telling me that this is sad. But I'm still kind of like waiting to laugh. But then I realize, oh, no, this is sad.
Yeah.
Like when we're first learning about Suki's story.
Right, yeah, it happens in, like, this...
There was, like, a really abrupt change of tone that I think caught me off guard for a second.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Anywho, Shall we begin?
Yeah, let's do it.
Donkey. So we kind of have a narrator throughout this movie, and it's Bugu. So a voiceover read by Bugu tells us that World War II caused a labor shortage in England, which led to a push for immigrants from India. So youth from Punjab settled in England until the Commonwealth Immigration Act of 1962 ended migration. But the dream to settle in England persisted. And then we're in London at a hospital, and there's a woman lying in a hospital bed who bribes an orderly to sneak her outside so that she could smoke, which he does. And she tells him to keep an eye out, and while his back is turned, she just, like, takes off.
Yeah.
IV in her hand, like, she's just going.
She's just walking with it, like, carrying it above her head.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And she goes straight to an immigration law office, where we learn that her name is Manu. Mm-hmm. And she demands from the lawyer to get her visa, but the lawyer tells her it's harder to get a visa to go to India than any of its neighboring countries. Manu says that she knows one man who can get her to India, who she last saw 25 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Always love that exposition.
Mm-hmm. We then jump to Laltu, Punjab. There is a track meet going on with a bunch of older men preparing to race, including a man named Hardy Singh. Mm-hmm. And I made a note that I know it's fake gray that they put in his beard and hair, but similar to Jawan, I was like, yeah, I like this a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
I prefer his natural grizzledness, but, you know, I'll take the fake if I have to.
I do too. I did make a comment that, like, we have once again aged up Shah Rukh to play what I think is ultimately his age.
His age,
because yeah. I would think that Hardy, like, was probably written to be, like, 30.
30?
But maybe we could argue, like, that 55. He's 40. So he would be, like, 65 max.
I agree. I had that thought as well.
And we aged him up to play his age anyway. Yep.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
Yeah. It's okay to play your age, Shah Rukh. Like, we're down for it. We're into it. Just
right.
Be 59 on camera. It's fine.
Yeah, like, they added, like, wrinkles on his face.
Yeah.
And I was like, you didn't have to do that.
No.
Whatever. It's fine. Not saying he's wrinkly. He looks great.
Or
also, wrinkles
wrong.
Also yeah. Look great. Really digging myself into a hole. Meanwhile, Geetu is settling in to watch the race, played by Bowman Irani. Mm-hmm. And he has Hardy's phone when Hardy's phone rings. So Geetu answers it and is shocked to hear who's calling. And he stops Hardy just shy of Hardy winning this race. He's literally like 3 feet from the finish line.
Yeah, but I like that everybody stops. They're all like, oh my gosh, Manu.
Yes, they're all very excited. And so Hardy goes to the phone and Manu tells him she's been thinking of him. And she tells him to meet her in Dubai on a specific day. And then she hangs up and tells the lawyer to get 3 visas for Dubai. But for whom? Well... Cue some fun music as we see two men standing on a street corner. These are Bugu and Bali. Manu walks up to Bugu and Bali and asks if they're in to go to India. And they are all super excited. And so we see the three of them get on a plane. Mm-hmm. And then it's a flashback to 25 years ago, 1995, in Laltu, Punjab.
Yeah.
A time when the three of them were desperate to get to London. It's explained that Manu's house was seized by a moneylender. Bugu needed to make money so that his mom could retire because she was wearing pants to, like, her job, and it was calling or is drawing the attention of all these men. And Bali was sick of listening to his mom's sewing machine going on and on because she was constantly having to sew to support the family. Mm-hmm. So life sucked for all of them, and they decided that the only way out was England. So they all go to a visa center, and the guy working there gives them all these ways to cheat the system and lie to get visas. For payment, Bugu promises to use his mom's life savings. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Manu needs to find a wrestling coach because she's going to get a sports visa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's going
to
happen.
Where are you going to find a densely muscled man?
Oh,
it doesn't have to be a man to be a wrestling coach, but...
That's true, but this one is.
This one happens to be...
Hardy riding in on a train. He's a stranger to Laltu, and he's looking for someone, but all he has is a tape recorder and an address. Mm-hmm. And long story short, he's looking for a guy with a cheetah tattoo, and that guy happens to be Manu's brother. And so Manu and Hardy end up meeting at the restaurant where she works, and they kind of figure this out through a series of circumstances that involve Hardy, like, beating up her boss.
Yeah, a good amount of silliness.
Yes, yes, it's a good time. And so Manu brings Hardy to her house, and we learn that Hardy was shot in the head while in action.
He was shot in the head? I totally missed that it was in the head. Woo.
I'm pretty sure he was shot in the head.
Yikes.
Maybe I'm wrong, but they also did bandage his head.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I wrote it. So if I wrote it, it must be true.
It's true now.
He was saved by Manu's brother, who carried him to a nearby hospital. And he was super fast, mm-hmm. which is why he had the cheetah tattoo. Yeah. And that's how Hardy remembers him. And then the brother then helped Hardy recover by playing songs on his tape recorder, which he left for Hardy when he, you know, left the hospital. And after spending a year in the hospital, Hardy is now back to return the tape recorder. But unfortunately, the man who saved him has died.
Yeah.
Manu then tells Hardy that her father's shop burned down in the 1984 riots, and then they had to take out a loan, and then her brother died. And while they were at the funeral, the loan shark seized their home. And now they're just living in the annex on the property.
Yeah.
But Manu has made it her mission to earn enough money to pay back the loan, and that's why she wants to go to London. Mm-hmm. Hardy's touched by her story, so he offers to help her and promises not to leave until she's on her way to London.
Yeah.
So they start training and wrestling because he's good at that.
Yeah.
And we see that, which is very fun. He's, like, teaching her how to flip him, which would be so satisfying.
Yeah.
Just to, like, toss Shah Rukh Khan over your shoulder.
Yeah. As long as, you know, he's on board and everything.
Yes, yes. Consensual tossing.
Yeah. It's the best kind.
Meanwhile, Bali shows up to marry an English girl, along with, like, a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah.
And Bugu tries to lie his way into a doctor's visa, but they are, unfortunately, both unsuccessful.
Yep.
They go back to the visa guy, only to learn that it was a scam, and they've all been conned out of their money.
Yeah.
Which is a real bummer, especially for Bugu's mom.
Yeah, whose life savings is just gone.
Yeah. But it's okay, because Hardy has a plan. So Hardy visits Bugu's parents and tells Bugu's mom this really elaborate lie to make her accept the fact that Bugu lost her life savings. She's a bit peeved about it, but is just glad that Bugu's okay, because Hardy had led her to believe that he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, you make up a lie that something terrible happened, and then you're like, and also this other terrible thing happened that's not quite as bad, though, right? Only one of these is true.
Yeah, well, good news. It's the less bad one.
Yeah, not a bad tactic.
No. And I also just, again, like, really enjoyed watching Shah Rukh in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, it just felt like such classic Shah Rukh silliness mm-hmm. and over-the-topness. And, yeah, I didn't realize how much I had missed it in his more recent movies.
I do feel like it's a classic character trait of the characters he plays that, yeah, they just spin the stories.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're charming enough that people are like, okay, yeah.
Whoa, okay. Yeah, you just get kind of blown away by the whole vibe.
Charisma. Mm-hmm. So Bugu's mom makes Bugu swear on his grandmother's life. And I love this, like, old woman's just sitting there. And she's like, why do you always swear on me? But she makes him swear on his grandmother's life that he won't think about going to England again. And the very next scene is Grandma's funeral.
Yep.
Whoops. And Bugu and Bali get distracted by another potential visa opportunity, but Hardy drags them back and reprimands them for almost falling for more scams. And he tells them that he's promised Manu he'll get her to London, and he'll get them there as well. Mm-hmm. Very sweet of him to get so invested.
Yeah.
He's fine. Like, he's doing his own thing.
Do you think the army missed him?
Well, that was my whole thing. I'm like, you definitely deserted your post.
I kept thinking it was going to turn out that he, like, wasn't actually in the army, that he was, like, lying about it.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't go to army. He stopped going to army.
I'm going to army, mother.
These are my awards from army.
Oh, it's so good. Anyway, Hardy tells them that the way to get to England is to learn English, then get student visas. Cue Gitu.
Yeah.
Their English teacher. And this is also where we meet Suki, because he's really frustrated with the way that they're going about learning English. And he's like, I don't understand why we have to jump through all of these hoops just to get a visa to go to England. Mm-hmm. And everyone's kind of like, you know, why does he have a bee in his bonnet? And later that night, Hardy gives him rum, plies him with rum, really.
Yes.
To figure out why. And then Suki tells a story about his fiance, Jossie, being married off to a man from London instead of him. And now he needs to get to London to save her because Jossie's husband beats her.
Yeah.
The hardest part of Suki's story is that he's like, I don't want to work there. I don't want to live there. I literally just want to, like, be in London enough time to retrieve her.
Yep.
And then get back on the plane and come back.
Right. Yeah. This was the moment you were talking about with, like, the kind of jarring tonal shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it kind of ping-pongs back and forth where it's, like, it's sort of like, oh, it's funny and everyone's sort of being silly and drunk. Oh, this is a really, like, sad, serious story. But then it swings right back into the comedic right. with, like, Shahrukh's whole kind of next thing. And
yeah.
It's like, what did you want us to be feeling in this moment? Because by going back and forth in this way, I sort of ended up just feeling confused.
Right. Like, they almost didn't let me sit in the heaviness long enough.
Yeah.
And, like, it almost had I had the impression that the other characters were going to, like, start kind of poking fun at Suki almost right. because I was like, oh, because it's lighthearted. He's being dramatic. Like,
it feel like it's lighthearted?
Right.
Yeah.
Because obviously domestic violence is never
no.
lighthearted, but it was just odd, like the way it was edited together.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
But there are then some drunk shenanigans, and Hardy reveals that he's a laughingstock in his hometown because he was also left at his own wedding by his bride. Mm-hmm. The next day, Suki and Hardy are super hungover in class, and Gitu and Hardy have a whole conversation about English vocabulary. And again, I also felt like Hardy was kind of performing in this moment, and then people were laughing, like, with him because he wanted them to laugh mm-hmm. because he was performing for them. But then it, like, suddenly shifts into him feeling self-conscious and being reminded of how he
right.
was laughed at when
yeah.
his fiance left him.
It's like everyone was, like, laughing with him, but then it's like he feels like they're laughing at him.
Yeah, yeah, which is true. You know, we're only human. Things like that can happen. We might go into something being like, oh, yeah, this is funny. Then it's like, oh, I suddenly feel bad. But also just kind of an odd, jarring yeah, moment.
It was. Can I say one other thing about this scene? Because I really liked, actually, two quick things. One is that I like Suki and Hardy are, like, sharing a lemon. They're just, like,
yeah.
passing a lemon slice back and forth and just, like, yes. sucking on it because they're hungover. Which uh-huh. isn't a hangover cure I've ever heard of, but I really enjoyed that a lot.
I'll share a lemon with either one of them.
Me too. hear that, boys? But then I also Suki describes English as topsy-turvy, or it might be Hardy. One or the other of them describes it as topsy-turvy, and they're like, why is English like this? And I just, yeah.
It's a stupid language.
It's a really stupid language. There are so many words, and there are so many rules that then just get broken.
Right. Yeah, I think you and I have talked about it on the podcast before, but, like, how lucky we both feel we are that we grew up speaking this language,
right,
that it
so
wasn't when we
to
had
learn
to, like, learn.
Yeah. Also, like, any linguists out there who are like, well, I know what, like, I've taken the linguistics classes. I don't need to, like, the whys aren't important. It's just, it's stupid.
Uh-huh.
It's a stupid language that we speak.
I agree, yeah. But, so in this moment, Hardy suddenly feels like they're laughing at him, and he's feeling sad because he's being reminded about his bride leaving him.
Yeah.
And so Manu stands up for him and then walks out of the classroom, bringing Hardy with her.
Yeah.
And we get our one, like, real dance number of the movie, Loot Poot Gaya.
Which I really liked.
I really liked it, too. Like, I just love watching Shahrukh dance.
Me too.
just always puts a smile on my face. Like, no, he's not the best dancer. No, right. He's not the most graceful, but like, he just brings that charisma.
He does. And I just, like, watching him dance in Pathaan and Jawan, it like wasn't the mm-hmm. same for me.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that same just like, oh my gosh, you're just so cute and I'm so charmed.
You're right. This is more like lover boy.
Exactly. Shahrukh. Yes. And that's what I was really, that is why I enjoyed this movie. The mm-hmm. really the only reason that there were elements of it that I enjoyed was because I got to see that.
Yeah.
And I had been missing it.
I also just really like the rocking chair dance move.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what you call it, but because I'm like it's not. Legs. Yeah, it's not actually that hard, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It does. Which I appreciate. Fun. Like, I can do that. Yeah. And whenever I can do something, I'm like, cool.
This is a good one. Yeah.
I'm 10 all out of 10.
I also particularly like the moment where Manu is wrestling with Geetu, and then Hardy just kind of like bops around, and he's just like his rippling muscles in his, in his tank top.
I was like, oh, yep, there they are.
Yep. He can't hide them.
You don't really see
long.
Them the whole movie, but there they are.
Yeah.
We also see within this song, there's a scene where they're all like the class is watching a movie in English.
Yeah.
And Hardy sees Manu crying at this English film. So he like stands up and he's like, stop the movie. And he asks her if she's okay. And she says that she finds the man proposing to the woman on screen, like that whole scene is so romantic and it shows that he respects the woman he's asking and all of this stuff. And she's like, it's just really romantic and nice. And I would like to experience that.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, noted. Storing that away for later.
Adorable.
Because he's obsessed. And the song ends with Hardy staring lovingly at Manu, who says, don't stare. It's time to focus. Once we get our visas, you can stare.
Yep. Oh, I love that. I love that.
It's great. Because she's also just, like, aware, and she likes him, too. Mm-hmm. It's all so cute.
Very cute.
So we then see Geetu walk into English class and ask Suki to speak for 2 minutes about the Taj Mahal, because he's preparing them to take their exams in English, and he said that's the real test, is that you're going to be given a subject that you don't really know about, or, well, you might know about it. Yeah, you know. You're going to be given a subject to talk about for 2 minutes in English. So you have to have enough of the language down to do that. Mm-hmm. And Suki recites a planned answer that they all kind of worked on together, that is really more a commentary on this requirement than anything about the subject, but it does go for 2 minutes and it's in English.
Yeah.
So it's a smart workaround.
It is, yeah.
And Geetu's really impressed by this. And so all the students go confidently to take their exams. Unfortunately, at the exams, they are not told to talk about a subject for 2 minutes. It's a lot more freeform than that. Mm-hmm. And they all have a difficult time. And I was watching this happen, and it really reminded me of a job interview I had like 2 years ago that, yeah, Kim, you already know about this, but basically part of the job was going to be speaking Italian, which I do speak, but hadn't brushed up on. Mm-hmm. I show up for this all-day interview, and then they're like, okay, and this one interview is going to be in Italian. And I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it, oh my God, specifically like Manu trying to explain like what else she eats for breakfast. I was like, oh God, this was me. Just a lot of hand gestures and like, what do you call it? Okay, that avenue's not working. Let me just lie to you and say this other thing that I do know how to say. Oh, awful.
Yep.
Awful.
It reminded me of like oral tests that I had taken in school in French, where I was like, I don't remember how to answer that question, so let me just make up some other kind of garbage.
Right.
With words I do know how to say.
Oh, so stressful. It just really put me back there. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Although I did have a chuckle at Hardy's exam when he's told to talk for 2 minutes about his family. And so he just goes through every member of his family.
My mom.
And then just is like, dead. And then he's like, do I have to keep killing off family members?
That was really funny. I enjoyed that a lot. And the guy giving the test seemed to be enjoying it too.
He thought it was funny as well. Yeah. And Hardy tells his examiner about his friends who are trying to get to London, and he also confesses his love to Manu. Well, not to, sorry. He also confesses his love for Manu, as well as his plan to propose to her at Big Ben. And then we see Suki, who fails his exam. He's told that he can't live in England if he can't speak English, but he responds that the British man examining him lives here but can't speak Punjabi.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
It's a very fair point.
But then the exam results are published. Bali strangely passed.
I know.
I feel like Manu, I don't know. I feel like Manu would have been the best at it, but maybe I'm just like, she's a woman. I don't
Women supporting women, yeah.
Yeah, but not putting down other men. Well, other men. Not putting down men either.
That's true, yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, the rest failed. And Suki is very upset by this, but Hardy promises him that Bali is going to London and he can check on Jossie. Suki then yells at Geetu that he made them all false promises that they could pass this test and get their visas. And Geetu's clearly really upset by this and takes it hard.
Yeah.
So the next day, Geetu goes to Suki's house and tells him that he's going to London via a donkey route, also called Dunki, an illegal route that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
And Suki's all excited. He's like, whatever it takes, I'm there. And he's also been waiting for the phone to ring because Bali is going to call with an update on Jossie. And so finally the phone rings, and so Suki runs to answer it, only to learn from Bali that Jossie killed herself after finding out he failed the English exam.
Ugh, yeah.
Suki then sets himself on fire, and Hardy tries to save him, but Suki dies.
Yep.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. Just
so dark. So dark.
So dark and so sad.
Yeah. In a way that just felt so unnecessary in the middle of this movie that,
yeah,
in most other moments is trying to be fairly lighthearted with a serious message.
Right.
And it's like this moment, and then, yeah, the moment, a couple moments later, it's like you went too far into the root of darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. At Suki's funeral, Hardy tells the others that when the British arrived, Indians never asked, know any Hindi? They didn't test the British, so how dare the British test them? Hardy then tells Manu and Bugu that he will get them to London, even without visas. They'll take the Dunki route. Hardy sells off his land to pay the agents who will guide them, and they set off. And they're joined by three other people from their class. The woman, the extra woman in that group, pauses to put some dirt in a container to take with her. And I thought that this was a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Those of us who are citizens of the U.S., those people who are citizens of the U.K. who are having really strong opinions about immigration and stuff and voicing them quite loudly, especially in the U.S. I can't really speak for U.K. But those types of people forget that a lot of immigrants don't leave their homes by choice.
Right.
They do it because they have no other options to succeed. And, like, this woman bringing a piece of her homeland with her because she's not certain she'll ever be able to come back.
Right.
That's touching.
Yeah, in many cases, particularly when immigrating illegally, there is not going to be the option of coming back.
Right.
If you make it successfully and can build a life for yourself, there's not going to be that option. Yeah.
Exactly. And we get a montage of their travels, and we see Hardy doing what he can to take care of Manu as they're bouncing around, you know, to all these different situations. And then they are stopped in Iran by some soldiers. And the soldiers tell them that they can go. And the other three people who join their crew, like their crew, take off running. And Hardy warns them to stop or they'll be killed because he and Manu and Bugu are still staying with the soldiers. But they keep going. And sure enough, the soldier who told those three that they could leave goes after them and shoots them, clearly for sport.
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah, really, really awful.
And also just the fact that the movie just included these characters to kill them horribly, which was clear from the moment that they're introduced. Like, we had never seen, heard from any of these characters before this point, and then it's like, oh, well, you're coming along. It's like, okay, well, clearly these are the ones who are going to die because someone needs to die on this journey.
Yeah, and like, from the perspective of the message, I get it. Because, like, yeah.
I think I just would have preferred that we, like, have known these characters so that there could have been a full emotional impact as opposed to just like, well, we need, this needs to happen for the sake of the plot, so let's just throw these
yes,
guys in there.
Yes, yeah. I agree with that, yeah. Hardy, Manu, and Bugu are brought to the soldiers' camp, where the main soldier directs Hardy to bring Manu into his personal tent so that he can rape her. Mm-hmm. Hardy plays along just long enough for the soldier to let his guard down, and then Hardy breaks his neck.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Rad.
Still traumatizing to Manu, yeah, of course. And Hardy then cleverly tricks the other two soldiers at the camp and kills them as well. So now there's a few dead bodies just lying around here, but Manu, Hardy, and Bugu are free. They go and find the bodies of their friends, and they burn them, then get on the train that will take them to Turkey. And Manu is clearly just shell-shocked by everything that's kind of just gone down. And Hardy hugs her, and then she asks him why he's risking his life to get them to London. And he says that he's crazy for her, and he has been since she stood up for him in class. Mm-hmm. And it's a moment of sweetness in the middle of a lot of fear and pain, which I appreciated.
I did too. I also felt for Bugu, who was just the third wheel.
He's just there.
He's just, like, looking on, like, all right, guys. Like, they make a point to, like, focus on him for a moment.
Yeah. We've all been in that spot, I feel. Wishing someone would court us.
Yep.
We then get another montage of them traveling, and they finally arrive in England. Mm-hmm. They encounter a white woman, who I can only call a Karen.
Yeah.
And then they make it to London.
Are British Karens also called Karen?
Yeah. I feel like that's like a universal thing, right?
Marys or, yeah.
Yeah. Bridgets.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they make it to London. Yay. And they hear Big Ben chime. And they're on the bridge, and Hardy gets down on one knee and pulls out an engagement ring. But Manu doesn't see this, because that is when Bugu yells that he's found a statue of Bali. Mm-hmm. But it's not a statue. It turns out that Bali is a street performer.
Yep.
Bali brings them to the house where he's staying, which he shares with a bunch of other immigrants. Mm-hmm. Hardy confronts Bali, because Bali had sent a bunch of photos of himself with, like, the house he bought and the car he bought. And Hardy tells Bali that these types of photos lure others who then die at the borders. Mm-hmm. And Bali says that he can't tell the truth because the lie is what makes his mother proud and also raises the status of his family back in India.
Yeah.
And by sending home most of the money he's making, he is directly making his family's life in India significantly better.
Right, yeah.
But his life is not better in England.
No, yeah. This was a really well-crafted scene and well-performed, and it hit me hard.
It was good.
Ways that I have never thought about the immigrant experience before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. And we see that the immigrants get jobs selling adult films and as janitors, but their main job, as Bugu's narration tells us, is avoiding the police. Mm-hmm. And we see that Hardy happens to be awake one night when the police arrive to raid the house, and he's able to get everyone out and away safely. And after this experience, Hardy tells Manu that they're going back to India because in England, they don't even exist and they will always be illegal. Manu argues that they're only here in the first place because the UK looted India for centuries. Mm-hmm. She tells Hardy that they risked their lives to get here and they can't leave now. Manu asks him to stay for her because she wants to spend her life with him, and that convinces Hardy because he's in love, and he starts searching for a way to become legal.
Yep.
So they find a lawyer, the same lawyer that we saw Manu talk to at the beginning of the film. And that lawyer says that they can either bribe their way in, claim refugee status, or marry a British citizen. In this moment, he points to a random, like, guy, and he's just like, yeah, that guy is pretty cheap. Like, you can just marry him. And sweet Bugu gets very excited by the idea of it being legal to marry a man in England, which made me really happy.
I know. I like that moment, too. I was like, good for Bugu for just being like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, all right, whatever.
But the lawyer says that the man in question is meant for Manu. Manu refuses at first, but does end up trying to marry this random British guy. because they're like, you just have to be married for 2 years and then you can divorce him and marry Hardy. But at the wedding, Manu like dodges his kiss and throws him over her shoulder, mm-hmm. just like she was taught. And then he threatens to kill her, which sets Hardy off. And there's the whole like, Hardy doesn't like that they were all trying to get him to kiss Manu on the mouth. And Hardy ends up going after the groom and the lawyer and the priest. The priest ends up calling the police. The police arrive and arrest them all because they know it's a sham marriage.
Yeah.
So that all falls apart.
Is this usually, like, I don't know that this is the way that I would expect the sham marriage to happen, the sham wedding to happen. Like, with yeah. the dress and the church and the preacher. Like, yeah. It just... Yeah, it felt very elaborate.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, like, it's not the kiss that makes the marriage legally binding.
Right.
And maybe they just didn't get the chance to sign the paperwork.
Anyway. I think, I read it more as, like, everyone was like, okay, well, this woman clearly doesn't want to marry this man if she's, like, refusing to
I agree, kiss yeah. him. Yes.
He had really scary teeth.
He did. Other than that, though, he seemed nice.
He did seem nice. Yeah, good for
nice
you.
Nice enough. Except for, like, being like, I'm going to kill you.
I didn't even clock that happened. That's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not great, guy. Actually. That's a red flag. If someone courting you says that, don't.
I do think, ultimately, anymore. This man's red flags outweigh his green flags, so maybe.
Yeah. Anywho, they are all taken to an immigration removal center where the lawyer comes to visit them. And he suggests a plan where they use Suki's ashes as evidence to claim asylum. Hardy is against this idea, I think not just because he finds it, like, disrespectful to the memory of Suki, but also because he is a soldier
yeah.
and doesn't want to claim that his country is trying to kill him. But they don't really have any other choice. So Hardy goes before a judge, but he's unable to lie and say that he needs asylum. Instead, Hardy asks the judge why they won't grant visas. He goes on to say that they let foreign goods into the country, but not foreign people. And the judge says that they do let people in, but only those who follow the valid visa process, because they don't want to let in terrorists. Hardy pushes back, saying that illegal immigrants are not terrorists, and in fact, immigrants make jobs. They don't take them. They take the jobs that Brits don't want. Mm-hmm. When the judge asks him if that means he believes in open borders, Hardy says that they already have open borders since anyone can buy their way in if they have the money. Their borders only keep out the poor. The UK may only grant asylum in the case of war or persecution, but there is no difference between death by bullet or death by hunger. Either way, a human is dead. Hardy then shows the judge Suki's ashes, and he tells him that no one wants to leave their friends, family, and homeland to face bullets and fear. They do it out of necessity. Mm-hmm. This was another moment that also was, yeah, like, really valid, well-written
yeah.
conversation. And I also like that they do show a judge who is sympathetic to what he is saying, and it's just that that is the law.
Yeah.
And so based on the law, the judge ultimately decides that Hardy will be deported back to India, but the judge tells the others that if they wish to stay, they need to claim asylum. And he kind of reveals, he's like, I know you're lying, but yeah. you need to just say it so that we can grant you that.
Yeah. Also a pretty good white actor.
Yes. Yeah. I had that thought too. Yeah. I was impressed. Yeah.
The bar's low, but he exceeded it.
He's going places in Bollywood.
He really is. Yeah. This one guy.
Manu steps up next, and when Hardy walks by her and says, let's go, she tells him that she needs to reclaim her family's home. Mm-hmm. So she ends up asking for asylum, and Hardy's escorted out. So we see Hardy go back to India and Manu become a street performer.
Yep.
So now we're back to the present in Dubai, and they see each other again for the first time in 25 years.
It's a very sweet reunion.
It is really sweet, especially between, like, Bugu and Bali and Hardy. Like, that's really cute when they all just start dancing together.
Yeah.
Manu, Bugu, and Bali explain that they had to meet Hardy in Dubai because as refugees, they cannot get visas to India because they have claimed that that country wants them dead. So they all go out to lunch, and Hardy asks Manu about her husband because he had received a wedding card from her, you know, however many years ago. She then reveals that she never married. She just made up a fake man so that Hardy would move on and marry. Mm-hmm. She also assumes that Hardy is married.
Yeah.
Hardy asks what the rush is to get back to India, and Manu tells him that she's dying from a brain tumor.
Yeah.
Hardy is obviously heartbroken by this, and Manu talks to him one-on-one and says that she doesn't want to die among strangers. She wants to die at home with her family. Hardy then promises that he'll get her home.
Yeah, she was also only given 1 month to live, and she looks pretty good for being at that medical crisis.
I also just, like, it just feels like overkill, literally.
Couldn't agree more.
At this point, like, why did she have to have that? I feel like it was only so that they had a reason to do the donkey thing, like, one more time.
Right, but even, it's like, I was just, I got so flustered, was making nonsense sounds.
Why couldn't it could have been her parents?
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like, her dad is dying and she wants to get home and see her dad one more time. Like, that would have had the same emotional like the same drive for her to get home, and she didn't need to die. Like, could have just had a happy ending.
But anyway, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We're almost to the end, but Geetu gives Hardy the name of a donkey agent in Dubai, and Hardy goes to meet him, and he works out a plan for them to travel by shipping container again, dressed as tourists from Punjab in case they are caught. But as they're getting in the shipping container, the Dubai agent turns on them.
Mm-hmm.
He's sending them back to London, and he's also called the police on them. So the police arrive at the shipyard, and they get the container where everyone's hiding in, and they open it. And the police tell Hardy and the others that if they lie in answer to his questions, they'll go to jail for 50 years. And he asks them their names and citizenship, and they all say the truth. But Hardy had this whole plan worked out with Geetu, and he weaves this whole lie about their identities, where he's like, oh, they're lying, they're actually these names. And those names that he gives the policeman line up with the three people who died the original trip to get to England.
Right.
So everything checks out. And so through a series of events, this policeman ends up promising that he will prove in court that they are all Indian citizens. And in 2 weeks, they'll be on a plane back to India.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks he's pulling one over.
He's
on
triumphed.
Yeah, but perfect. Yep. This is exactly what was wanted. So they get deported, which is the one and only time you can really say that. In that inflection.
Yeah, with that much joy. Yeah.
They wanted to get deported.
That was the goal.
On the plane back to India, Manu says that if Hardy didn't have a wife, she'd kiss him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he just chuckles. Bro, should have gone for it.
Yeah.
Then they're back home in Laltu, and Bugu goes home and sees his mom still wearing pants. I love that.
I know. I wrote that down, too.
And Bali sees that his mom's tailoring business is absolutely thriving. And then Manu sees that her family got their house back, and now they call it Manu's bungalow. And also, Hardy added a miniature Big Ben on the roof.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Very cute.
And Hardy tells Manu that he never married, and he remained in her hometown because he was waiting for her to return.
Mm-hmm.
But so now he gets down on one knee and proposes. And he also says that running and hiding and fighting was life for him because he was with Manu, whereas the following 25 years without her were his donkey. He wants her to become his wife and end that suffering. And Manu says that when a man proposes so romantically, can a woman say no?
Aww.
No.
No.
And then Hardy's so excited because he's programmed the Big Ben to chime according to like an app on his phone. So he turns his back on her to get this going. And when he turns back around to face Manu, he discovers that she's died. So he places the engagement ring in her hand and just holds her. Again, like,
why?
Okay, let me, we'll wrap this up and then we'll talk about it. We then see the words come across the screen. Just 140 years ago, no visa was required to enter any country. With visas came discrimination and migration. Today, borders bar only the poor. Each year, more than 1 million people try to cross borders illegally in search of a better life. Many die on the way, their bodies never to be found. Of those who survive, very few are able to come back to the home they once left. And this is interspersed with photos of real immigrants. And we then get a final scene between Hardy, Bali, and Bugu, where they discuss possible business ideas. And then a random man on the street overhears them and advises them that there's no future in India. They should go to London. He then suggests going via donkey because it's so easy. And so Hardy casually flips him onto his back, and they all have a good chuckle.
Yep.
I also feel like that was kind of a... It was weird to have, like, the... Okay, let's just talk about the whole thing. Let's talk about this. Because, okay, we have Manu die very suddenly after being proposed to.
Yeah. And they could have even had it end with, like, okay, we know she's going to die sometime in the near future, but, like, they still, like, presumably get to, like, be married to one another for a little while.
Yeah.
Like...
Right. The only thing I can think of is if they were really trying to drive home the fact that, like, these immigration laws and policies have wider ramifications even than are, like, immediately clear. Yeah. Like, it already ruined their life in that way, but it also kept them apart for 25 years. I don't know. It seemed unnecessary. Yeah. It's like these people have gone through so much and they waited for each other. Right. Couldn't we have let them
be together?
Be happy.
Yeah. I also, I'll be honest too, that I just don't feel like the love story was good or necessary in this movie.
Yeah,
like
I also
felt forced. I didn't feel like there was a ton of chemistry, which is not a knock at all on either of these actors who I'm, you know, like, but I just wasn't feeling it. And part of it for me was the age thing with Shah Rukh, where I'm like, I want to see you play opposite actresses who are like your peers.
Right, not like a 36-year-old actress.
Exactly, yeah. But anyway, yeah, so I completely agree about everything you're saying.
Yeah. And then I really thought we were going to end on the actual, like, facts.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, okay, so we've killed Manu, and also here's the sad reality of what it is to be an illegal immigrant. And then now let's have a funny little scene at the end.
Right.
It felt odd.
I agree. It was weird to do that. I don't know that I've ever seen a movie, like, have the kind of, like, okay, here are the facts that, like, drive this home.
Yeah.
But then let's just throw this, like, unrelated, like, moment of levity in at the end. Like, it felt, again, forced and...
Yeah. It's like, don't worry, no, everyone's gonna be okay. But it's like, well, but they're not.
Right. Because this is still happening. Like...
Yeah. I think that's the one time they kind of undermine their own message.
That's fair, yeah.
But it comes at the end, so we can kind of just, like, chop it off.
Just in pretend our minds. Like that didn't happen, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we pretty much covered my main thoughts at the beginning. I do think it was a good film.
I think so, too. And again, I think, you know, the message was important, and they didn't do anything to make it seem less important or... to take away from it, really, I felt. Mm-hmm.
I think I just also wasn't, because I didn't watch the trailer, I just wasn't aware that it was going to be about, like, immigration policy.
I didn't realize it was going to be that. Like, I thought it was going to be just, like, here's the journey that these people are taking to get into this country. I didn't realize there was going to be this whole, like, commentary component to it.
Right.
But
what did you research?
Well.
There's one glaring topic. Yeah.
Can you guess? So, I did what I would call a very, like, surface level research on illegal immigration, specifically by Indians into countries like the US and the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the essence of the movie is accurate. Like, they're telling a story, so certain things are sensationalized and certain things are kind of narratively done to drive the message home, but it seems to me, from what I understand reading things, it's a fairly factual and accurate interpretation of what this experience might be like for people. So I didn't, like, go into too much depth about the experiences that people have, and more just kind of found some facts to help root us in reality, root the movie in reality.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also say more about this later, but I did, like, there was a point where I just stopped, where I could have kept going, but I didn't want to. And
I, and I'll, that tends to happen with these heavier topics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's justified and fair.
Thank you. But so, starting off, the term donkey was coined in the 50s, and it refers to, in reality, too, as in the film, an illicit route that is used to immigrate, particularly prevalent among Punjabi people immigrating to the UK specifically. It derives from a Punjabi idiom meaning to hop from place to place.
Okay.
So yeah, originally referred to immigration specifically to the UK, where as of 2009, somewhere between 550,000 and 950,000 illegal immigrants were living, and not just from India, from across the globe, but pretty high numbers, potentially almost a million. And I also wanted to mention that an estimated 4 to 10,000 applications are submitted annually in the UK on the basis of what is apparently a sham marriage. So that component of the movie is also an avenue that people try to use to immigrate legally or to change their status to a legal status.
Right.
But now the term donkey or the donkey process encompasses illegal immigration to any country, and the U.S. has replaced the U.K. as the most common destination for Indian folks trying to get elsewhere.
Wow.
Yeah. The number of Indians illegally immigrating to the U.S. was negligible as recently as 2013, but it jumped to 30,000 by 2020 and more than 60,000 by 2022. And
Interesting. And
between October 2022 and September 2023, nearly 97,000 Indians were arrested at U.S. borders.
Okay. This is the news. Yeah. To me.
Yeah. This was news to me, too. A bigger number than I anticipated. I also should say I got a lot of these facts from a YouTuber named Dhruv Rathi. And I did follow up on them.
Great. Okay. So, yeah.
But
Sorry, are you about to go into like why?
I will go into the why at like eventually.
Okay, later. Okay.
My notes maybe aren't structured in the most logical way, but
that's okay. I'm here for it.
So the movie is based on apparently a Gujarati village called Dingucha, which boasts that of its 3,000 citizens, 1,800 live in the U.S. And so this is a town that, I know that doesn't make total sense, but like, it's like, yeah, we have a population of 3,000 people who like are supposed to live here, like
right,
who own,
but half
you know,
of it, yeah.
or not own, but like, this is where they live. This is their hometown, but 1,800 of them, more than half, live in the U.S.
Yeah, okay.
And it's really interesting to see there, like, in this town, there are signs advertising exactly the kinds of things that we're seeing in the movie. Like, take this exam, or, oh, this is a process you can go through where you don't need to take an exam. You don't need to take a class and learn English. And it only costs, you know, 65 lakh rupees. Like, so, you know, this, all of these things are actually happening, not just in this town and other places, but this town is kind of famous now for, you know, they say that like 100% of the children born there are going to like the people in the town say 100% of our children are going to move to the U.S. eventually. Like, this is just it's just perpetuated that this is what people do here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what percentage of that 1,800 people from this town moved illegally, but that was the case for a family named the Patels, who paid 65 lakhs, which is nearly $80,000, 80,000 US dollars, to an agent who promised to smuggle them across the US-Canadian border. So the family was able to get into Toronto, and then this agent was going to smuggle them into North Dakota, which is a far way from Toronto. That's like a big chunk of country you got to get across. But anyway, so the Patels tragically are an example of a family who did not make it to their final destination. They actually froze to death like a dozen yards from the US-Canadian border.
Oh my God.
I know. Horrible. Family of four, young family of four. I mean, it's tragic when anybody dies in this kind of
but
a
especially,
way.
Especially, I mean, children.
Yeah. So there are a lot of stories like this. Again, I didn't feel the need to elaborate on many more of them.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
And, you know, these things are happening as people in Dinguccia and in other parts of India are being promised, you know, a better life in nations like the U.S. and Canada and the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
Agencies conceal the dangers of entering a country illegally, the trials of actually settling in that country, the difficulty of being a brown person in a predominantly white nation, mm-hmm. and the legal processes that will await immigrants who encounter the police or who eventually seek legal status. Now, this came up when something that you had researched in the past, and I was trying to remember, it might have been from Minal Murali. You were researching, okay. like, how many Indian people
immigration
moved to, yeah and I and you I yeah. think you were talking both about legal and illegal immigration, because I remember you bringing up the fact that people try to come up through the Mexican border too.
Yes, yeah.
Of that 97,000 I mentioned before that happened like just in like 1 year,
mm-hmm.
It was almost pretty evenly divided between the U.S. and the Canadian border. It's becoming more common for people to go through the Canadian border, you know, now that the Mexican border has become an even more contentious place than it had been previously. But what they do is they'll get visas to a place like Ecuador or Brazil, where it's easier and cheaper for them to get visas. And then, yep, they go up through Central America, through Mexico, and try to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. This route includes trekking through jungles and deserts and across lands that are controlled by drug cartels, and many of those who attempt this are killed by the elements or by the cartels or by other gangs or by the guides who are paid to bring them northwards for whatever reason, for whatever motivation.
You're just kind of banking on the fact that you can trust, like, you hope you can trust them.
Yeah, you're putting your trust in a lot of people who you don't know nothing about. Yeah, very scary situation, very dire. You have to, like, people have to be so desperate to opt for this. It's really tragic. So going back to the whys of this, those who use this the donkey process to travel to the U.S. are most often lower middle class Indian citizens who lack the funds and the qualifications to immigrate through legal processes, which are open to folks in the upper middle class and on up. They hear stories of people like them fulfilling the quote-unquote American dream, and they seek to make that dream a reality. And I have to assume that part of the reason for the uptick in, like, the last decade is social media. Because social media has been around for longer than a decade, of course. But, you know, the more that you are, it's easier for people to send pictures of them enjoying their time in America than it was back in 1995 in the movie when it's mailing, like, hard copy photos.
Like, photos. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
There's also rising unemployment rates in India, which is a huge contributing factor. Previously, it had been that Punjab and Gujarat were the two states with the highest rates of people leaving illegally. And now the state Haryana is a close contender for, you know, being in the running for, like, the top state for that as well. And Haryana has an unemployment rate of nearly 40%, which is four times the national average.
Wow.
Yeah. And also, Border Patrol officers say that the most common reason that people are crossing borders illegally is because they are fleeing persecution in their home country. So now we get into the asylum piece of this, which is, again, we see depicted in the movie. This is what seemed to me to be the least realistic component of the movie, because it was so easy for our characters in the film to plead asylum and have that granted to them and be able to live in the country. And like you said, I can't speak for the UK, and that's where they were going through that process. It's certainly not that easy in the US.
Right.
But so immigrants will willingly surrender themselves to the authorities in the hopes of being granted asylum, and then the individuals must plead their case in court, and the process can take months, even years, and deportation is a very likely outcome of this process, even if they've been in the country fighting to stay for years.
Yeah.
And this is where I stopped. And this is where I felt I did not have the capacity to continue on. And I recognize the privilege that I have as a a white woman in America being able to make the choice to actively not think about this in this moment. But I'll be honest, too, that part of the reason for me was just the name Trump all over this research. Yeah. And, you know, and I was thinking, too, as you were going through the recap, I was thinking about when Trump was running for president the first time and the famous, you know, and he was talking about Mexican people immigrating illegally into the U.S., but, you know, they're criminals, they're rapists, and I guess some of them are good people, you know, and that's very much the mindset that we see depicted among, you know, that I feel like there's the judge in the asylum scene said something that, like, evoked that for me. But,
There are so many cases of, like you said, the judge at one point is just like, oh, well, it's not your people I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah.
And there are so many cases. I'm really specifically thinking of there was a woman of color who recently did, like, made a documentary about white nationalists in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was interesting. She was having these conversations and she was saying, like, okay, the derogatory terms that you use to describe people who look like me, you're talking about me. And then they're like, no, no, not you.
Right. Yeah.
We would never call you that. And it's like, okay, so you're actually, like, you're calling this group of people you've never met. And by group, I mean, like, just population of people, like, massive numbers, certain terms. And then you haven't met them. And then you do meet one or two and you're like, okay, well, not you, though.
You're an exception.
Yeah. Right. And it's just, like, it's a flawed way of moving through
really
the world.
It really is. Yeah. How many exceptions do you have to meet before you realize it's the rule?
Right. Yeah. Right. And in fact, what you originally believed was true of an entire population is the exception.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's the most frustrating part about the immigration debate in the U.S., for
sure. Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, there's a fear-mongering aspect to it. And these people are going to come and they're going to take something to you. And it's like, no, they're going to come and they're going to bring something to our community.
That's what's so upsetting is, we have the statistics.
Yep.
Yeah. That have shown that immigrants actually tend to contribute more to the U.S.
Immigrants,
like, economy.
They get the job done.
They really do. Thanks for looking into that and sharing
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I actually did have one fun fact I was going to share. It's not a fun fact. I apologize.
An interesting fact?
No, it was an interesting fact and not a fun fact. I'm sorry I got you all excited.
I don't know what I could have thought, you know. Oh, God. Okay. What's your fact?
The interesting fact is that India has the highest number of illegal immigrants living within its borders in the world, which I guess isn't the most surprising thing when you think about the fact that they're such a populous nation.
Right.
But it surprised me to learn that fact. But yes.
So, sorry, you mean that, like, the country of India within its borders has the highest number of
people who illegally immigrated into India.
Yes. Okay.
India. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an estimated 20 million illegal immigrants living in India from Bangladesh alone.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that I thought was fascinating.
It is. Yeah. Wow.
And obviously that, again, those numbers are hard to pin down because if you could go around and count those people, then more of them would be getting kicked out of the country. But that's the government's estimation.
Right.
Yeah. Oof. That's the real end of my research.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Bit of a downer.
Bit of a downer. But yeah, we weren't expecting it to be quite so much of a downer. I think I had thought that there was going to be more of a hopeful angle to the movie, but it didn't feel particularly hopeful, did it? Maybe that's what I also found frustrating about some of the comedy moments is, like, it was very superficial comedy that had nothing to do with the message. Like, there was no, like,
it's like, stop trying to distract me and try to make me think I'm having a good time.
Right, yeah. And, you know, if the story had ended with Manu and Hardy together, it would have been like, okay, still we're not saying that the immigrant experience is something that people should aspire to, but at least we can give people, like, something to feel joy about.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Yeah.
But okay.
Switching gears.
Bollywood news.
My only piece of Bollywood news is that I saw on Instagram that Ayushman Khurrana was in New York City for the Time Gala. And I was just like, I was just in New York, like just
you
a couple weeks ago.
You could have seen him.
And why was I and Ayushman Khurrana in New York City at different times? Like, come on, universe.
Now, do you feel better or worse about that than you did with, like, Tovey being in New Orleans?
Frankly, I feel worse about it just because New York is so much closer. Like, that...
And you, like, actually were there?
Yeah, yeah. That feels like it could have... And to be clear to anyone who's curious, I would never go up and talk to a celebrity.
No.
I would just, like, look at him from afar and be like, oh, my God! But yeah.
But just to know you're in the same city,
just
too.
Just breathing the same air.
That matters.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
My only piece of Bollywood news is probably not that recent, because as we all know, I'm just late on those things. Which I say with the utmost affection for myself.
Yeah. Deservedly so.
But I noticed recently that there is a fairly new release on Netflix. It's a TV show called Hiramandi, The Diamond Bazaar. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that advertised, but it's like a bunch of women in gold.
Oh, I have seen that.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And what caught my attention, I've kind of seen it advertised and it, you know, it piqued a little bit of my interest, but I was like, I don't know. And then today I noticed that it is starring Sharmin Segal, who is in Malal. She is the, she's Asta from
Malal. Oh my
Malal.
God, there she is. I pulled it up. Yes. And like, she's the first yes. face you see on, yes. oh my gosh.
I know. I know. I noticed that today and immediately was like, okay, that is going on my list because I loved her.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah. I don't know anything about what it's about.
Awesome.
That's my news.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited about that. I'm going to add that to my list too, because I also see Aditi Rao Haidari is in it, who I don't remember if there's anything that we've watched that I could reference right now that you've seen her in, but I've seen her in a few things and really liked her. She's another of those actors who's like, she speaks all of the languages and it's very impressive. Oh,
that's so impressive. Mm-hmm. As we've mentioned, we barely speak English.
I know.
And certainly not a true, like, French or Italian speaker.
No, no.
Please don't make us speak it to you.
I've studied a lot of languages.
Yeah.
I don't know them. I couldn't talk to you in them.
Languages are hard.
They are hard.
But yeah, that's all. That's all good time.
That's great. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Pluggables.
Yeah.
Follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. Do what you do. Mm-hmm. Also, consider following or subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You can also leave a rating or review on said podcast platform. But as always, regardless of what you choose to do or not do, we appreciate you for listening.
Yeah. And we also appreciate you if you join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. That's where we add our favorite songs from the movies that we watch, and we link the playlists in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts on Tuesdays.
Oh man, we're finally doing it.
We are finally going back in time further than the 90s.
Yeah, we are going the whole way to 1988. Yes.
IMDb says 1989, but let's go with 88. That's earlier.
Amazon Prime says 1988.
That's funny because usually they feed into each other, so I don't know.
Yeah, fascinating. But anyway, we're watching Chandani.
Yeah, this is a movie that we saw talked about in The Romantics. We were both very enchanted by Sri Devi.
Oh, yes.
And one of our listeners wrote in and shared several recommendations for Yash Raj films, several of which we have added to future
yes.
plannings. But our listener did mention Chandani as a good option if we do want to see Sri Devi in, at her, you know, her peak.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
we do.
And we do. So here we are.
Yeah, it's happening. I am super pumped.
I am too.
Because it also, it seems like a good, a good icebreaker for us in our initial like foray into the 80s.
Yes.
Like everyone seemed to pretty much love it. So
right. Yeah. That seems promising. It seems like it was it seems like a core classic in a lot of people's taste. Like a lot of the people we love in Bollywood now referenced it as being like a favorite of theirs, which does feel very promising.
Yes.
And our plot description on IMDb is Fate leaves Chandani shattered as her love Rohit disappears from her life. She meets Lalit, and they befriend each other until Rohit knocks on her door.
Oh.
See a ghost?
I love a ghost romance. We know this.
Although ghosts aren't great at knocking on doors, so probably not.
Some of them are.
That's true.
You'd be surprised.
I guess it depends on their density.
Science.
Yeah.
Chandani is available to watch on Amazon Prime. And the Amazon Prime synopsis is, in a cruel stroke of fate, Chandani's heart is shattered as Rohit disappears from her life. When she meets Lalit, who is fighting the demons of tragic memories, they both find solace in this new friendship. Lalit's affection gives a new direction to Chandani's life, but Lalit falls for her, and Chandani resigns to destiny, till one day, Rohit knocks on her door.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was like they took the IMDb synopsis and was like, let's make it dramatic.
Let's beef it up. Let's add some demons.
Yeah, always. Demons and ghosts. Ghosts and ghouls. Maybe some goblins.
We're going to be so disappointed when this movie is just, like, totally, zero like, ghosts. No supernatural elements. We won't be. We're excited.
Yes.
Yeah, and...
I'm very excited.
I also wanted to say how excited I am for watching a Rishi Kapoor, like, a young Rishi Kapoor. I always just think of him as Ranbir Kapoor's dad, but I know he's so much more.
he did come first.
He did come first, and he did stuff. So let's experience it.
I'm excited to see if their acting styles are similar in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, watch, enjoy. I am so excited. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
We do.
And to, like, go hug a teddy bear, maybe.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice, yeah.